welcome to another episode of Meeting Pros. I'm your host, Kevin Finn, and I'm here with my co-host, Jessica Park.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderfully. Our wedding was last weekend, and I'm very excited after producing a full production event that tonight I only need to bring my wine key with me to the event that I'm doing tonight. So
okay,
that's very exciting.
Event. Yeah. You are just busy as a bee.
So I try to stay busy, definitely.
All right. Well, we have a great show today. I'm going to let you introduce the guest today.
Okay. I have in the studio here with me today, I have Sparrow Marcioni, my mother, which is very exciting for me. And I also have Sammy Blue. And we're going to start with my mom, actually. And
all right. Wow. So you braved it. You brought your mom to the studio. You got a couple under your belt. And now you're ready to show off it.
Well, both of them are career entrepreneurs. And I thought, well, it would be a very cool thing to have them talk about their experience in becoming entrepreneurs.
Definitely. Is that career entrepreneurs or serial entrepreneurs?
Serial.
Well, I guess we're going to start with you, Sparrow, ladies first. So have you listened to any of your daughter's shows so far?
I have. I am very impressed with her ability.
Yes, she's been doing a great job. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I currently am in technology, and I went through the transition of initially being a part of an event coordination company that I founded. And during that period of time, I was also a partner with Isaac Hayes for a while. Okay. That was also marketing. And kind of transitioned from there to internet marketing. And that now has been more than 20 years ago.
Wow.
And so I was one of the first people to build an internet company, internet-based company, along the same time that Charles Brewer did with Mindspring.
All right.
And we had a different approach to it. But
you're still around.
Well, he is too.
He is too, but you're more important.
I'm sitting here today.
I'm here.
You're here. Yeah.
So what was your motivation in becoming a career entrepreneur?
I didn't actually know I was going to do that for my whole life. But
that's probably true.
You know, I've made a couple of attempts to work for other companies and always found it more enlightening. I enjoyed it a lot more when I was working for myself, building my own company and working for myself. And I don't know. I guess it kind of...
You're supposed to say, you are.
I missed that. Sorry.
Yes. But really, when was the first time you realized the word entrepreneur? Someone called you an entrepreneur? Because I know a lot of different people that take different paths. They are entrepreneurs, but it's really strange for someone else to be like, hey, you're an entrepreneur. And that epiphany that you have, you go, man, this person's right.
Yeah, that was quite a while ago. That was back when I was still doing the event planning and special events, and I'd done a lot in nightclubs and amazing events that were just ridiculous.
Promotional events, giant promotional events for nightclubs, and my brother and I were able to see firsthand some of these wild events. We had some pretty bizarre excuses when we got to school the next day why we didn't do our homework.
It's better than my dog ate it.
Yeah.
The rat frogs did, JD.
So tell us about some of your early companies, and more of the entertainment companies that you...
Well, I started a lot of what I did because I was working at the Limelight as a mannequin. And
you have to go into it. I'm sorry, you can't just stop a Limelight as a mannequin. How do you get that job? What is that job?
Well, I was roller skating on the stage in the Limelight, and they said, "Can you also do the
dance
on skates mannequin thing?" And I was like, "Yeah, probably." So, and I got hired as a mannequin to work at the Limelight as a mannequin.
So you skate, but you're frozen or you don't move?
No, it's a moving mannequin thing. It's like
robot.
Oh, okay.
She started the robot.
Yeah, that was me. And then I taught it for a while after that. So I taught a lot of other people how to be robots, too.
Mm-hmm. I learned it when I was a kid, so it really spread out there. It became a big thing.
Yeah. Then I went out and I taught a couple Playboy bunnies how to do it.
All right. Did you actually get to the Playboy Mansion?
I did.
Oh, meet Hugh?
I did.
Mm-hmm. Was he a nice guy? He seems like he's a really nice guy.
He seemed kind of, like, lethargic.
Okay. So... I don't know what. How would you? I don't know what he would be today. If he was lethargic, then I don't know what you'd say. Human mummy. I don't know.
Yeah, it was kind of like a strange person with wearing pajamas with a whole bunch of people that he didn't know in his house.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I like to always think of him as like he was the really unpopular kid when he was growing up and a geek, and it's like now I'll show you guys now.
Yeah, you know, that's reasonable. The house was amazing, but so, you know, I kind of went from that and then started doing events and building props and working on the movies that were being filmed here in Georgia, working through the film commission, different things like that. And then I started doing some nonprofit work, helping with getting sponsorships for nonprofit events and things like that. And one of the events that I did was just massive. It was I got recruited to help do the Inner City Games in Los Angeles.
Wow.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger is the executive director for the Inner City Games. I think he still is. But so, yeah, Arnold.
He's
not as tall as he looks in the movie.
Is he as buff?
He was then.
He was, all right.
Yeah. He was pretty amazingly handsome. Yeah. Yeah.
And that accent. I don't know what it is about that accent, but.
But then you brought the Inner City Games to Atlanta.
And then we did one here, and we did it as a remote broadcast between Los Angeles and here live. I had Evander Holyfield as our executive director here.
Good.
And then Arnold was the executive director there, and they talked to each other. We did. Oh, it was technical.
Sounds like difficulty. A logistical nightmare.
Especially back then. God. Nowadays, I think it would be still difficult to do, but you did it, wow, ahead of your time.
Yeah, we did it. We did it at the Omni, so it was the Omni's really not there.
Yeah, it's on.
Which is gone now.
Yeah.
So tell us about how you got into the internet security, the technology from events.
Well, when I was doing these events and doing a lot of marketing, I could see that my business was transitioning a little bit differently. I was losing some of the accounts that I had with ad agencies, and I said, you know, I'm going to look at this opportunity. It looks like nobody knows what to do with the internet. I don't have a degree in something that would indicate I'm not an engineer or anything like that, but I started doing some research on where the internet, where I thought it was going. And initially, I started working with clients to teach them how to market themselves on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And once I got into it and started doing research and meeting with some of the engineers, I figured out that nobody knew what to do with this. Nobody knew what it was. And, right. And some of the people accidentally built it, okay? So, okay, I guess I can do this then.
Right.
You know? And so that was a long, long time ago. And
it's
still
that way now. No one knows what the internet is, especially our government.
Yeah,
it's a series
really.
Of tubes or something.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. So that's how it kind of transitioned into the initial technology. And then with that company, that was Internet Passport. And we built a universal dialer so that we could create one way to log on to all the different pieces of network that were out there at the time because everything was all fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
And so our dial-up software, which everything was dial-up then, the dial-up software was what we actually used to drive our business with initially. Mm-hmm. And then I sold that company to a company out in California, which worked out really well because that was kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. What company did you sell it to? Are they still around?
Franklin Telecom. Yeah, I think they are.
All right.
They were an unusual company, too.
Go into that a little bit. Selling your first company, that has to be exciting and exhilarating and addicting.
Yeah, it was. It was right when all the internet was, everything was internet
booming.
A lot. And Franklin Telecom was a public entity. So I sold my company to a public entity, which basically meant everything became public. Trading on the stock exchange, the whole bit.
So you could just see it there every day.
Yeah. I was like, wow, you know, these guys paid me a lot of money for this company. I wonder why. And then the next day I'm looking at the stock going, holy cow.
Wow.
Their stock went up by $5.
So I that is unheard of.
60 million shares.
I hear this all the time when people sell their company. Normally you have, especially this day and age, people overvalue their company. Did you overvalue? Did they give you more money than you thought possible? Or what was the thing? Because you have that emotional attachment.
Yeah.
You built it from the ground up, and then you have to give your baby to someone, and obviously you think your baby's worth more than they do.
That is true, but I think in this case, even though what we negotiated initially had it played out that way, probably would have been an accurate valuation, what I thought about mm-hmm. it was worth. But because of the public stock situation, I actually ended up getting a lot more than I expected.
Oh, so you actually got some public stock. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It ended up being a really good situation.
So where do you go from here? You just sold the company, you go to the Bahamas for a little bit, vacation, or...
Well, I got a special benefit when they bought my company because they were in Thousand Oaks, California. So part of my deal was I also get a condo on the beach and a convertible in Malibu. So I didn't have to go anywhere for the vacation. I actually got a condo on the beach and a
very smart woman.
Yes.
So I was bi-coastal for a while.
That was very nice. I remember that.
It sounds like you had a great life growing up, Jessica.
It was pretty wild. Speaking of that, what was one of the wildest things you did in your various careers? Have we already touched on that?
No. There's so many.
Try to pick a few.
Probably being an inanimate life form at the Limelight. That was really strange.
I thought we were going a whole nother place for that.
So. Know anything you never wanted to know?
I remember as a kid, I went to school and we didn't do our homework. And the reason we didn't do our homework was because we were busy building props for the Fat Boys concert.
Yeah.
We had to build a giant styrofoam hamburger.
Yep.
It's character building.
And dice for the stage. And I was like, I'm sorry, I couldn't do my homework.
Life skills. You should tell your teachers, these are life skills. I can use these later on in life. What is this math?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. We did do that. We did do that. And that was an interesting thing. Well, the Monster Mash was a big deal.
Oh,
that
I
was
love
a
the
huge
Monster Mash.
Event at
Holy
the Fox.
Holy cow. Yeah.
It was
we
at the
did
Fox
that
Theater.
At the Fox. And, we had, I don't know, probably 15 different bands or pieces of bands that came in, and Isaac performed a song. Yeah. He came in, and at that time I was working with a lot of people with Prince and some of the other ones, and some of these, that's how I met Sammy originally, okay. too, I think. And one of my very good friends who's not here anymore that does the Blues Train was the one that helped me get most of the musicians.
Yeah, Bob Patton.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
We all know, yeah.
Yep, we all know Uncle Bob. Yep.
I feel like we should start a documentary about your mom.
Sounds
like it'd be very interesting.
I'm telling you. I've told her that. That's part of the reason why I wanted to have her on.
Well,
because
we are happy to have her.
Yeah.
So let's get more into what's next in your career at this point, and how do you get more to Blue Shift? Are there a couple companies in between?
Yeah, I had a network. I had a company that did network security. One of the first of the groups that were founded had here even. We mm-hmm. had SecureWorks, which has gone on to be very successful.
Again, ahead of your time. Before mm-hmm. people knew they needed their network secured, you were like, I'm here.
Yep.
Yeah, funny thing was, during that time, most of the bigger security companies, the network security companies, were run by females.
Wow.
Were founded by females.
Well, I always find female owners, both my moms own their own companies, they're just smarter and better at it. And less bravado. And they're like, oh, I'm going to drop $30,000 on this membership here. Look how much money I have. No, they're like, all right, let's grow the business.
You're right. I think we probably make better entrepreneurs.
Definitely. Yes. I will agree with that.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know if too many other people would agree. that was NetSentinel. And then we went to just network, and doing CET networks was my next endeavor after that. And then I just went and transitioned into supercomputing, which was like going from network to hyperspace for me, because it was a whole new knowledge base that I had to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the clients for that company, which is Linux Labs, which is still
yes.
in existence, that's my mm-hmm. main development company. We had built computers they're basically gigantic systems, you might say, for a lot of the universities and government entities predominantly.
Okay. And you self-taught this all to yourself, right? You've taught yourself through the ranks?
Osmosis, working with some really, really incredible people.
That's what I'm trying to tell the kids now. All my friends are going out and getting their master's degree because they can't get jobs. And I'm like, that's not the reason you can't get a job.
Nope. Yeah.
You're just going to put yourself $50,000 more in debt. Mm-hmm. You really need to hustle and bustle, start getting to learn people and learn how to work.
Yep. Yeah, I have an engineer that works for me that has got to be on the scale of the most intelligent person I've ever met, and certainly most people. He doesn't have a college degree, but there's some benefit to that because when I ask him to address a problem or can we build this or anything like that, he has no limitations. He hasn't learned that you can't do something.
That's awesome.
Right. So he can do anything.
If you ask him to build a styrofoam cheeseburger in the middle of the night,
yes,
he'll do it for you.
He'd engineer it for me. I'd get the drawings back anyway.
He'll do a rendering first.
Yep.
So what's the coolest project that you did last year?
We got hired to build write the software for a tablet for Mitsubishi.
Oh, that's cool.
For a little company like us, because we're not a big company.
Mm-hmm.
That makes you better. That's like, what, the fifth largest company in the world?
Yes, exactly.
I'm like, really?
That's great.
It was. It was really good. We have several other projects we're doing with them, too, now. So, yeah, that was a big deal. But now we got an operating system that runs on any tablet, so we've got some opportunities there, too.
That is great. And you guys keep that, mm-hmm. so you have the rights to that.
Mm-hmm.
That is awesome. What advice would you give to someone that wants to be you? They want to be the next you, and they're young right now. They don't know what they want to do with their lives. They want to be a business owner, a female business owner. What would you say to them?
If I was going to start a new business today, my first steps would be to get out and look at the market and find a niche that seems fairly broad as mm-hmm. far as the target market is concerned, but preferably something that the person would enjoy doing, you know, whether it's events or technology or whatever it is, and then draw on your own resources, whatever you have. If you've got a family in entertainment, you know, lean towards that or mm-hmm. whatever, you know, find out what other resources you have, whether you have a network already built or, you know, you can resource those things. And that's kind of...
And that's a tested, proven theory. We got Jessica to prove it right here in the studio. So.
Yep.
So what's next for you?
I am really focused right now on our wireless technologies and working on the which is our BlueShift wireless entity. That's where I'm kind of focused because I think that's what's going to be the long-term solution for building a good foundation mm-hmm. to retire from. I've also started doing, believe it or not, animal rescue.
That is awesome. My mom does the same thing.
Does she?
Yes.
I had no idea what I was getting into. I didn't.
My mom's a crazy cat lady now.
Oh.
We're on our way.
Oh, gee. I'm not the only one. I've probably always been crazy, and I've always had a few cats, but I've never had the two added together when people are talking about me. Yeah.
Do you have any absolute truths about finding success in your business?
You really have to love what you're doing.
Yeah.
If you don't love what you're doing, you're not going to be able to make it through the tough times.
Mm-hmm. Right. I can attest to that for sure.
Yeah, you got to love what you're doing.
Whatever it is, do it with everything you have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Have you had a mentor? And I know that you have, but I don't know who specifically would be your one mentor that you've learned.
Can you have only one?
I've had a group.
Yeah.
I've had a pretty good support group. Of course, there's a lot of people that were friends that were supportive.
Right.
But the people, there's some local people that are also terminal entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. you know. Doug McKendrick was one,
mm-hmm.
you know. You know
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
And Bob Brown with the Red Baron was one.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, even Bill Swearingen. and he knew me when I was going back to school and everything, and they were people that I admired for their ability and their business skills. Well, not that I was still glad I went to college and got the business. Mm-hmm. That education was relevant, especially from an accounting perspective. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Accounting is, like, if you don't have some clue there, you're in trouble. But
you need to find someone else. Don't do it yourself.
No. Don't do it yourself. But you got to have enough to know that they're doing it right.
Yeah, that is true.
Because you get somebody that's not, and you don't catch it, you're toast.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's a scary, scary
situation.
You know,
so those were some of the people that also locally had businesses that I really admired.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your online radio, your NetMix platform?
That's why she sounds so professional.
I know, so it's her secretary voice.
Yes, the secretary voice. NetMix is an offshoot of a piece of software that we wrote to do streaming music, audio, and we built the whole platform to demonstrate that we had successfully built this for a client and then ended up with our own basically internet broadcasting entity. It's different genres that we've set up. And I particularly like my stream, which is Slipstream.
I like the name.
But, you know, we also broadcast and will continue to broadcast the radio shows of Uncle Bob Patton. That's the Blues Train, and
he's the original voice of radio.
Yeah. And he's, you know, it's an interesting thing. I think we'll probably keep that up as long as we possibly can.
Yeah,
that sounds great.
But it's a DJ platform. It's more for mm-hmm. DJs to promote their sets, mm-hmm. Where they can kind of always revisit them and have their fans visit them if they're not able to listen to them live wherever they're.
Yeah, could it be the future of radio? Maybe, because radio seems like it's dying. The terrestrial radio is not what it used to be.
Terrestrial radio is financially in horrible distress. We built this system so that if you're doing a live broadcast, you just have to take our little device with you, plug it into the internet, plug it into your soundboard, and boom, you're on.
Wow.
So it automatically cuts into a stream and then replaces it, you know, brings the stream back up when you turn the live feed off. So it's perfectly acclimated for doing live events and things like that. We can do broadcasts from any place where there's an internet connection and a soundboard, basically.
Wow.
This is why when people ask me what my mom does, I say she's an entrepreneur.
Well, I think we could actually use that software or that box for what we do to make our lives so
exactly.
much easier.
Probably.
We'll have to talk about
that. Yes, we'll talk about it later. But let's get your contact information because we have another great guest in the studio that mm-hmm. we want to get to. So how do people reach out to, contact you, find out more about your company?
The best way is probably email, and that would be sparrow@blueshiftwireless.com. And our phone number is, oh gosh, do I have my phone number in my head? No, probably not.
That's okay.
They can Google Blue Shift Wireless or Linux Labs International. And either one, they can reach me that way.
Thank you so much. It was very, very great. I think that's one of our best interviews. Most intriguing, at least.
Thank you.
Yay.
Thank you.
So not to put you on the spot, Sammy, but next up on on Meeting Bros, we have Sammy Blue with Georgia Legacy Foundation, Inc. How are you doing, Sammy?
I'm pretty good, man, but I don't know if I can measure up to a super mom, though.
But you got the voice, though. You got the voice.
I'm feeling a little insecure at the moment. But,
so you
but I'll try.
Well, we really appreciate you being in the studio. You had some hardships trying to get here, I hear. So.
The usual blues man life. It's nothing, you know.
Nothing big.
It's always something, so I'm here. That's what matters.
You know. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started and how you became an entrepreneur.
Entrepreneurship kind of runs in my family. All the way back, I was born and raised here. Mm-hmm. I'm a Grady baby, one of the few.
I'm a Piedmont baby.
You're Piedmont, well, hey man, you're actually born here, you know, a real native, something rare.
Yeah, exactly.
But as far back as I can remember, my great grandfather was a farmer in Douglas County and owned 500 acres when everybody else was a sharecropper. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've been trying to figure out how he did that. I still don't know how he did it. But in any event, I think if in my memory it starts there. My dad was an entrepreneur. My favorite uncle was one of the biggest bootleggers in the Cab County. you know, there's all kinds of entrepreneurship.
I agree.
You know, this is America. You know, it's about the dollar. So, you know.
I was young once. I did some stuff.
I understand. But in general, basically what I sort of came around to after high school and some college was that I didn't really want to work for a salary for anybody.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, it was like, wait a minute, this is not how you get rich.
Not at all.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then I was always in the arts as well, photography before music, and just recently have a chance to kind of combine those. But what happened was, to be honest with you, I met Jimi Hendrix and I no longer cared about doing anything else.
I bet that happened to a lot of people.
I just didn't care.
mostly women, probably, but
you meet somebody that embodies what you want to do.
The energy, everything, the like energy, soul,
everything.
Yeah.
Jimi Hendrix was your aha moment, huh?
well, I think my uncle was my aha moment, but the real aha moment came before that. Mm-hmm. I think one of the first entertainment shows I saw was at the 81 Theater in Atlanta. Used to be there, mm-hmm. so that was the equivalent of Atlanta the Apollo Theater, mm-hmm. in Atlanta. It's no longer there. I was 10, and my uncle, the bootlegger, took me to see a show, and I will never forget it. It was Gate Mouth Brown, T-Bone Walker was the main act. With Moms Mabley and Pig Meat Markham. I'll never forget it. I was 10 until today. I remember laughing how hard I was laughing.
Yeah,
you know. And the next year was the real kickoff moment, because the next year I was 11. I saw what would be politically incorrect now, mm-hmm. to name a show. I saw The Blind Show. The Blind Show was Ray Charles as a headliner.
Oh, yes.
Clarence Carter, and then at my same age, little Stevie Wonder.
Wow.
He was 11 with his first song, Fingertips. And I'm like, wait a minute, this little blind, little skinny blind kid's down there.
If he can do it, I can.
I'm like, there's no way I can't do this, you know. And until today, I can't sing like Stevie Wonder, but you know, but he was in the special, you know, little kid, but sort of things pointed me towards working for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Everything seemed to point at that. Not to mention the 60s and 70s and 80s and all the possible business, possibilities that were there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's pretty much how I got started, was just seeing people in my family who chose not to have day jobs,
mm-hmm.
but they were making more money than the people I knew who had the day jobs. They had better houses. They had better cars. You know what I mean? The kids had better clothes.
Different, better schools. All that.
And
kind of
all
stuff.
Of that. And I was like, wait a minute. You know, this is. I don't think.
You see that they work harder than everybody else, but at the same time, when they want to take off an afternoon, guess what? They take off that afternoon.
Exactly.
And that's
exactly
the freedom.
Exactly. When they want to go to the Bahamas, they're going. They don't have to ask anybody.
I don't have an extra week off. So.
Exactly. But I think the thing with Jimmy was that what we talked about was that, you know, you can't be good in anything. It's like earlier when she was saying you have to love what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You can't be good at anything if you don't do it. The main thing, you know.
It sounds so simple, but it doesn't go into anyone's mind.
I know, but it's like you got to do it and do it all the time.
Exactly.
I mean, and for me, loving it is a plus.
And Jimmy lived it.
I still got to do it, whether I love it or not. But if I love it, life is much better. Life is much easier.
If you can have the money, you can love what you do, then it makes everything better.
Well, I mean, you know, if it's a task and not a chore.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
If it's a productive process as opposed to, you know, a labored process. You know, I don't really believe in working hard. I think if you're really, really smart, you can think through that.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, no.
That's what I said all through high school.
I work long hours and do what you're doing with consistency, but I would rather work smart than hard.
Exactly.
You know.
That equals the money.
Well, you know, it also happiness. Equals, you know, less anxiety, less frustration. I'm not. And it's kind of funny because as it turns around, it's like I was telling you before about I was a photographer before I was a musician.
Mm-hmm.
And although the music came to me first, I didn't really see it that way. And I just knew I wanted to do arts. And as it's turned out now, years later, I actually get to do both. So once again, I've started paying attention to what is available, but what the universe has in store for me. Not so much what I'm seeking out, but what comes to me naturally.
Exactly. I love that process.
You know what I mean? And it sort of comes to me recently. Film has come back into my life.
That's good.
And revealed itself to be one of the things that I love most to do.
Well, I have a film background, so.
Oh, cool.
So how does this all tie into you starting the Georgia Legacy Foundation?
Well, the Legacy Foundation, it ties in. I started it about 6 years ago. I had done another nonprofit when I moved back here in the 80s. It was the Atlanta Blues Preservation Society. So I always wanted to do something to assist musicians and artists in related fields. It's not just music. I mean, you know, without guys like yourself, DJs, music doesn't get on the radio.
Exactly.
You know, so I mean, so there's an extended thing of the arts community that you have to, you know, be conscious of. But Georgia Legacy came about because basically I looked around, and since I would say 1989, since mothers were drunk driving. Mm-hmm. Did DUI laws.
Yeah.
And in Georgia, where they raised the drinking age laws at that time and stuff, it completely killed the nightlife.
Yeah, definitely.
It made a lot of people safe and put a lot of musicians out of work.
Oh, I see that. I see that in Buckhead all the time.
And the scene never recovered.
No.
So, and you have more than ever now because we have a larger population. And the scene is what it is. But it never really recovered. So you have some of the better artists now sitting at home, not performing. So one of our things was well, wait a minute. And also the fact that we live in Georgia, and while Atlanta is a metropolitan area, Georgia sort of is different with its music, as opposed to like Mississippi that embraces blues. When they started getting casinos down there, all of a sudden they started embracing blues as the state music,
right?
Tennessee has always had Memphis and Nashville.
Yep.
You know, needless to say, music is ingrained in the culture of New Orleans.
Oh, yes.
University, I mean, it's just there everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's not like that here.
Atlanta is so good at being almost good at everything and not great at anything.
I mean, I can't even. I finally met somebody who sees it the way I see it.
I'm from here.
We know.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, I call it a big town crouched on a city.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You know, it's not. You know what I mean? It's like swimming in honey. Keep stroking, but you ain't getting there.
Exactly.
But at the same time, it has every possibility that you could imagine. For anything to happen,
that's what's so frustrating.
Exactly. You know, so I sort of felt like, well, I need to take another approach to the business of music, and what I would really rather do. And I noticed that a lot of the times in business, sometimes even though you work, you can't help yourself sometimes as much as you can help other people.
Yep.
And sometimes you need other people to help you do what you do. So I thought, well, this would be a way to network those people.
I love it.
You know what I mean? And at the same time, I'm not really worried about making money or making a living at that. But at the same time, what happens is because of the nature of the business.
It helps.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You make the same contacts.
Mm-hmm.
The contacts are exactly the same on the entertainment side of it.
I'd say they're better, you know, just because you did it without money in mind. You're not trying to make these loose connections. You're making these wholehearted, very true, helping people out connections, and that comes back actually better than if you actually were trying to network yourself to make money.
I think it's a lot less self-centered, yes.
Yes.
You know, and it's also one of those things where I have been very blessed to learn from the people I learned from. I mentioned one, Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
But then these one-on-one personal contacts with these people sort of gave me a whole nother perspective, because I kept meeting all of these very successful musicians. You know, the top of the line. That's how I wanted to learn when I wanted to learn blues. And Jimmy was very early on. I was in high school.
Wow.
You know, I was in like the 10th grade when that happened.
Yeah.
And he taught you how to play your first song on an electric guitar. I read that in your bio.
Yeah, he did. He did. He also told me, you know, don't let anybody fool you, because there's blues in every music that comes out of America.
Yeah. I love
that. He was like, no matter what they call it, you know, what label they put on it. Yeah, and it was, that song was Red House, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and I know guitar players get tired of it, but I don't care. I play it. I play it because he showed it to me, you know.
Yeah.
But point being is, I met a lot of these very famous people from him to T-Bone later. I mean, I could go on and on. Muddy Waters, George Benson, was a friend. But I met all these, and then I sort of went home and went and looked in the mirror and said, hey, you know what? You're not one of those people.
Yeah.
You know, and most of my friends are not one of those people.
Yeah.
So, i.e., as in any industry, you look at it, and it's, you know, 10% of the people making 90% of the money.
Yep. So you got to get in.
And you know what I mean? It's
very close-knit.
Yeah, well, you accept that. If you accept becoming an entrepreneur, an artist, I consider all artists to be entrepreneurs.
Yeah, definitely.
First of all, because you put yourself out there on the line.
Even more so.
You know.
I don't think there's a word for the artist entrepreneur.
Financial suicide is what I mean. you were committed, and I tell people I took a vow. You know, of poverty to do this foundation.
Yep.
You know, because anything else, I would have went crazy.
Oh, definitely.
You know what I mean? You're trying to, and I mean, it's like, until today, I haven't paid one of my personal bills from anything that the foundation does, ever.
That's good.
You know, but now you're not supposed to, but it's very difficult.
I know. A lot of people do it. Nonprofits, for a company that's not supposed to make any money, make a hell of a lot of money.
Well, absolutely. Nonprofit does not mean not making money.
Oh, yeah.
At all. But my whole concept was to develop it for 5 or 6 years. You know what I mean? Before, and have solid things to offer anyone that would want to be a member. I don't want people putting in their money to go, well, we're not getting anything back for this.
Yep.
You know.
You guys know what the largest nonprofit in the United States is, right? It's the NFL. They're a nonprofit organization.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't know that.
I forgot that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's get back on track. So you're doing your music, and you just recently released a album this year, I believe.
We released two this year, actually.
All right. Well, this is your chance to plug them, so we want our listeners to know about them.
Well, we released one that's on Hot Tracks Records, the local label here that's been here forever, Big Al Jano on Hot Tracks Records, and it's Sammy Blue, A Blues Odyssey, which is actually an anthology.
I love it. Like the
Odyssey. If you open that up, as a matter of fact, I think that's got that has pictures in it from me from kindergarten to high school.
That's so cool.
It's
crazy. It's really crazy. But we also, equally important, that we released a Georgia Music Review CD, which are a conglomeration of Atlanta artists, Georgia artists, mm-hmm. that are under the umbrella of Georgia Legacy Foundation,
right.
Which we were talking about before, which Bob Pat had a lot to do with. Mm-hmm. We got robbed with him leaving. He was going to be the front man for all of the recording stuff, and then we lost him. So I'm sort of still. I don't know that I'll recover from that one, because I don't know that I'll ever meet anybody I trust that much.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but, I can agree.
But we're trying to get the music out there.
That's good.
My music as well as that music, and we will be basically working towards the review. is available for all kinds of things. The foundation has programs for everything from, you know, getting instruments for inner city kids to hopefully we're going to start some workshop stuff up. We have a speakers bureau of, you know, all people who actually do that, that can give you history of Georgia music, R&B music, soul music, blues music, whatever, predominantly looking at roots music. So we have all of these things to offer in the coming year or so to schools, art museums, anyone who wants that.
Yeah.
And ultimately, hopefully down the line, that what I'm seeing, and you as an Atlanta will understand this. what it's really coming down to for Georgia Legacy Foundation is that we need our own building.
Yeah.
The bottom line is that you can fly into Atlanta from anywhere in the world and not be able to find adult music.
That is true.
That is
true. You can fly into Atlanta with all the history of if you imagine who comes from Georgia, James Brown,
yeah,
Otis Redding, Fletcher Henderson.
We've got some of the greatest.
Yeah, but see, there's no if you fly into Memphis,
you
can find somebody playing B.B. King songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you fly in Atlanta, you can't find anybody doing Otis Redding songs.
So nope. We need to find you a venue.
You know, we need a venue where we can have, you know, I call it 7 nights a week, but it'll be 6 nights a week and, and gospel on Sunday with a fruit brunch.
Let's do it. Let's do it. I mean? We got no four alcohol. People in this room. We're gonna get that going.
We're going to work
on
that.
If you really think about it, there's nothing like that in Atlanta, and we're now almost a city of 8 million or something, almost
it's
10
ridiculous.
Million.
Yeah.
You know, and there's nothing in this city that represents Georgia music in any way, shape, form, or fashion.
Yes.
Nothing. So, you know.
So I have to think, with all these different businesses you have going on, and we haven't even talked about all of them yet, but you have to put on a lot of events, I would think. Like,
well, once I get that building, yeah.
Once you get that building, you put
that's the point for having the building. Right now, we're kind of doing benefits if artists need benefits. Tributes if they need tributes. We're kind of stuck doing that until, and I think within this year we're going to create probably a once a month networking jam session type thing once we find a venue that's, you know, appropriate for that.
Mm-hmm.
It could be sort of a fundraiser, but that's coming up. Mm-hmm. Among other things, we're also in the midst of shooting a documentary film, because we have one friend, Mr. Tom Carpenter, was the main producer for Comcast, who mm-hmm. shot all of the local stuff. He has like 400 hours of 30-minute shows, finished 30-minute shows on Georgia artists that we're trying to parlay into one documentary film.
Very cool.
You know what I mean? Awesome. So he's got 400 hours, so I don't think it's going to be hard to get him. You know, so but you know, once again, raising money to get that edited, to get that. There's a process there.
So we got to get you a venue so you can start raising the money so we can see all these things come to fruition.
Exactly.
That's what I'm looking at, because we're looking at, you know, maybe approaching Coca-Cola.
Sure.
And we want a state-of-the-art building, something that has interactive stuff for the kids.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, you know, the whole ball
should
of wax.
Have a museum. Maybe you can have like a
museum component.
A Hall of Fame kind of stuff for musicians.
Well, you know what? You know, we sort of don't want to go Hall of Fame. We want to go because we need to leave that to the Georgia Hall of Fame.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
You know, Lisa Love, who was running that and who is now the head of the Georgia Music Department, is a very dear friend of mine. And we're not trying to compete with the state anything like that. Although it may be a very similar format, and to be honest with you,
a different name.
Exactly. you know, at not at cross purposes, but at same purposes, you know, we would love to promote. But you know that they had to close that down. They
mm-hmm.
haven't.
Yeah.
So it doesn't exist. So we aren't really competing with anyone.
Welcome to Georgia.
But love goes out to Miss Lisa Love and Georgia Music. But a lot of things like that sort of have happened over the years too that make me want to do this, because I watched the City Fathers turn down the Grammy Hall of Fame. They had the building picked out on Peachtree Street. They would not give them the tax incentives. They moved on. Now it's an incredible thing in Hollywood.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
We did the same thing with Orlando and studios. They wanted to come here for movies. We were supposed to be the epicenter.
Oh, I know. I know that. Well, that at one time, and it's starting to happen now.
Again, yes.
Starting to happen now, but that at time, I was doing films then, to make a quick segue, if you don't mind.
Yes, no, I'd love to.
I was doing that. Thank you very much. You're so smooth. It went right by me. But, yeah, because I was doing films in the 80s and 90s and TV and stuff like that and series, and it sort of went away because they took away the tax incentive. Mm-hmm.
Right.
They realized they were missing millions of dollars and thousands of jobs, so they recapitulated. Now we have movies happening, and now that sort of started back up for me, and I'm very excited about that.
Mm-hmm. I think you have a company doing something with that.
I have started something I wanted to do since high school, which I have to do one thing here. I got to give rappers a shout out.
Go for it.
Okay. Not for the music. Not for
their acting ability.
Not for the music. Not for their acting ability. Definitely not for their dressing style. Definitely not for that or for their language. I will give them props for their business acumen.
Oh man, yes.
Okay, because this, because when I was in high school, I wanted to still. After I met Jimmy, a few years later, I wanted to start my own record company, start my own publishing company, take charge of my own stuff, own everything.
Yep.
Goes back to that entrepreneurial thing now.
Yeah.
See, if you own it, if it don't work, it's your fault.
Yep.
see,
a lot of people don't like that.
You can't. Well, I don't know. I do like that.
I do too.
I do like that because it makes me get up in the morning and do it.
Makes you accountable.
No, exactly. Nobody else can do it but you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But the new company is Silver Screen Sounds.
With a Z.
And I basically started that company because I have my own studio. I have a lot of stuff recorded that's not, quote-unquote, going to come out on a CD. It's music.
Yeah.
And what I was looking at was that, I had done this before. I had worked for Paramount and Laura Moore doing I'll Fly Away, the series I'll Fly Away, and had done Mama Flora's Family and In the Heat of the Night and all these things. And I kept getting typecast.
Yes.
It's like if they needed a blues guy with a guitar, I was him. and grateful to be him.
Yeah, exactly.
But after a while, I was sort of like, well, wait a minute, I would like a line.
You're like, I've got depth. Come on.
I'm like a real person here. Yeah. And what happened was, though, and once again, when it came back to me just recently, last year, it came to me, I got typecast again. And it was for Trouble with the Curve, Clint Eastwood.
Okay,
movie.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I ended up, and they tricked me, of course.
Of course.
Well, they told me, you got this scene coming up with Clint, and it's going to be in this his love interest in the club. And I get there in the scenes with Justin Timberlake and Amy Adams. Not with Clint. I was not happy.
I wouldn't be happy either.
But Justin was cool.
He seems like a cool guy.
And Amy was just absolutely wonderful. So we did.
A crush on her. So
get in line. Get in line is all I can tell you. She's a sweetheart.
Yeah.
But once again, it reminded me what I really wanted to do. It was like, okay, I can act and do the music. That's a plus.
Justin Timberlake said the same thing.
It's a plus, man. And then it's also one of those things where, okay, it's the song that they got, which is on that record. The song they chose was a theme song for one of my first records for Hot Tracks Records.
Okay.
Everything in Mo. And it sort of spoke to what it was, it was a love scene type of thing, she's everything in Mo,
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there thinking, it's on this record company. The record company owns the publishing company. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute. I got to split this money. Something's wrong. Something's wrong with this picture. Yeah. Something's very wonderful with this picture.
It's a good problem to have.
It's a good problem to have, but there's a difference between $5,000 and
$10,000. Yeah.
Big difference.
So if you are the sole owner, you're getting the $10,000.
Right.
Yep.
And there's no one to discuss it with. There's no one.
You can discuss it with yourself if you want. You have all that money. You can hire a shrink if you want.
Well, exactly. Exactly. I can hire a surrogate manager.
Exactly.
Or whatever. Whatever. You know what I mean? Anybody, But it sort of was like, okay, it's time for that to happen because I now have the platform to do it.
Yeah.
And that was good because, at the end of the year, and I sort of think of business in quarterly. Where did I get this done this quarter that adds up at the end of the year to being worth me saying I accomplished something this year.
Mm-hmm.
In dollars, in not just in dollars and cents. That might be one contact that I made that year that made my next 10 years. You never know. Yeah. You just don't know, you know. But point being, that worked out really well because I did get a song, you know, assigned to Warner Brothers Music.
Mm-hmm.
The movie did come out. It's as soon as the movie came out, I got another part.
Great.
It was funny because that movie was one line, one scene, one song. That's it. Okay.
Yep.
The next movie that I got that's getting written that I'm working on now.
Two lines.
No, two songs.
No, it's the second movie. The two is there, but it was the movie's called We Be Kings.
Okay.
And originally the part was written for blues player Magic Slim, who, God bless, just recently passed on.
Mm-hmm.
And I took his place because it was just obvious that he wasn't well enough to do the part and stuff. But it went from one line, one song, one scene to lead role in an independent film and music director on the film.
Great.
Awesome.
You know, and right now, I'm a little bit anxious because Better Than That. This sounds crazy for me saying Better Than That, but I may get to reprise a role that I did in the 90s in Zora Neale Hurston play.
Really cool.
Hopefully, you know, I'm crossing my fingers. Even have to audition for this. But hopefully
I can bribe someone with a radio interview if you need.
It's got
some power.
Yeah. Well, it's with great people. It's with, you know, it's Kenny Leon's company, True Colors.
Yeah.
With Hilda Willis directing, and they're not doing it until September. But I did the part in the 90s. I did it with the Portland Stage Company.
All right.
And the best acting experience of my life. The stage is just completely different from movies. It's real. Movies, you can shoot it until you get it right.
Yep.
On stage, you just got to get it right.
I agree.
Right. There is no, you know, and I love that, you know, that work.
Energy,
that,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I love that pressure of having to have it right, you know. But all in all, you know, I've got the publishing company up, and it was for that very reason we're talking about, was that I had done that, jumped into another movie, and now the industry's coming to Atlanta. Now I don't have to move to L.A.
Everything's happening.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to move to New York. Well, I would never move to New York anyway. But
I moved back from there. I just moved back from Harlem.
I love Harlem.
I do love Harlem.
I love Harlem. I just don't want to live there.
Me either. I never want to live there again. You know, New York.
Me either. I lived in New York for a year. That was enough.
Yep.
You know, and I love the town in the spring, summer, mm-hmm. spring, summer, and fall.
Oh, yeah.
You know, thinking that entrepreneurial-wise, as a musician and an actor, it would be silly for me not to have a publishing company because if you look at the strata of – I mean, I know rap artists who are getting, you know, $30,000, $40,000 for a song in a movie.
Yeah.
And to me as a musician, it's not even a song.
Yeah.
I understand it's rap music, but, you know, it's not musically – viable to me as a musician.
Exactly.
I can listen to it as a consumer and go, oh, that's a nice beat. That's a nice rap. But, you know, as a musician, I'm going, well, where's the hook? Where's the intro?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Where's the verse? Where's the chorus?
Where's the artistic?
Exactly. You know what I mean? Who is this person ever going to actually talk in pitch?
Nope.
You know, I mean, I'm not knocking rap. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To me, it's like, you know, it's one of those things of being African.
Yeah.
You know, the most basic thing that African Americans do is show the retention between African American and being African.
Yes.
Therefore, rappers have a beat.
Yep.
You understand what I'm saying? That's it.
You got it. You're keeping it real.
And they can speak Ebonics really fast. So
I can understand Ebonics really fast.
You're a better black man than me. Because I don't understand.
That's not the first time I've heard that.
Well, I mean, but I don't understand half of what they're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if I really sit down and put on a headset and concentrate, I will. But, you know, it's from. But every generation has their music, and I'm not knocking that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
If it works for them,
but
fine.
If you're seeing them get it, you should be getting. It's an opportunity.
Well, you know, the thing is that America is a market. The world is a market.
Truth.
And it changes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That doesn't bother me because there is always a market for everything that's out there. What it does do is spread everything out. It's like, well, I don't know if you saw the recent Grammys.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Okay, when you make all those other categories and you spread everything out, that makes it more inclusive, right?
Yep.
It also waters down everything.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So what I'm looking at was like, okay, you know, all this time can go by and styles and, you know, what is still valid. It's like the old saying, you know, it's nothing sacred. I mean, true. You know, it's sort of like, you know, and I don't mean to wax political here, but, yeah. You know, I've watched a lot of things get very mediocre since the beginning of George.
Let's say
George Bush's presidency. Everything started getting very mediocre at that point. For some reason, I have
set a new standard.
I'm telling you, man, the bar was not. It wasn't lowered. It just was, you know, disintegrated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But at the same time, I know that there are people. You know, we live in a place of excellence. No matter what anybody says, how they act, we live in a place of excellence. So excellence is always possible.
Yeah.
I love it.
You know what
it's
I mean? It's the only thing that gets me up in the morning is that, okay, I know I'm not going to make $1 million today, but
today I'm going to be awesome. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm going to feel like I made a million if I don't.
Yes.
But, you know, but you have that in America where you, if you're able, and it goes back to what she was saying about loving what you do.
Yeah.
You know, we have the freedom to love what we do. Mm. Nobody's forcing us to go into a coal mine.
Not at all.
Nobody's forcing us to, you know, you know what I mean? We have that freedom. And I just think being an entrepreneur is one of the essential freedoms that we have because that means it's self-determination.
I love that.
You know what I mean? That to me is a primary freedom, more than the freedom of speech, more than the freedom to bear arms. You know, you can determine your own life in your own future.
Definitely.
Yeah. A lot of people, I don't think people in a lot of places really understand that. As a matter of fact, I think we as Americans take it pretty much for granted.
Most do, yes.
You know what I mean? But, you know, I'm very happy to do what I do. If I do well at it and it gives me, you know, support in terms of financial stuff, that's great. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But then again, if I die tomorrow, I did what I wanted to do all my life.
Amen to that.
You know, I don't care. You know what I mean? I need to leave some money here for other people. But, you know.
Well, we're going to have you guys both back in the studio. You guys are great. Sam, I think we could talk for another 2 hours with both of you. So.
Well, I would quickly like for Sammy to plug his upcoming events.
Plug the events.
Oh, please,
contact all of that, please.
Yeah, I've seen you guys are so good. I forgot why I was here. No, and this is one of those. We do these events on this one. Coming late, unfortunately, is a tribute, as we had to do for our dear friend Bob Patton. We're doing a tribute to Robert Chicago Bob Nelson, who was one of the primary blues artists here in Atlanta. Who's passed on, and they had enough money to get him buried and things taken care of. They did not have enough money, however, to get him a headstone.
Okay.
So on Saturday, April 6th, from 4 p.m. till 2 a.m. at Northside Tavern on Howard Mill Road.
All right.
We're familiar with Northside Tavern.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people, you know.
Yes.
For those of you who are not familiar with Northside Tavern, we are having an event there. But we're going to celebrate and honor Chicago Bob Nelson that night and hopefully raise enough money to buy a headstone for him. And
is there anywhere else they can contact to give money if they can't make it to that?
They can send money to – we do have George Legacy PayPal.
All right.
Also, they can send money to P.O. Box 1369, Decatur, Georgia, 30031. Care of George Legacy Foundation for Chicago Bob.
All right.
Those are the two places that they can commit monies.
All right.
And of course, what we want is everybody to come out. It's only a $10 cover, but you can also add to that to the donation when you get there if you like.
Mm-hmm.
But we're trying to get, you know, 200 people out. You know, this is very simple business. We're trying to get 200 people out at $10 a head so we can buy them a headstone and anything, and just so people know, anything that we make over the amount for the headstone we're going to give to his family.
All right. You know, can't be that, guys.
No. when we do have, like, some of the top names and blues artists on this show. Sandra Hall is going to be on the show. Willie Hill, who's the R&B soul, great. He's out opening up for R. Kelly now. Who else we have? My dear friend Nate Nelson, Jack Leg Preacher, Tony Bryant, Larry Griffith, Deacon Blues. God, it goes on. John Liebman, Bob Page, DeBreeze Kings, Stoney Brooks. It goes on and on. Eddie Tigner. And of course, I might, you know, take the stage myself.
If they raise enough money, right? So.
Well, you know what happens is
that,
is that if I'm there, I can't get out of the building without doing it.
If people keep buying you drinks, you know, I know how it is.
You gotta
play the triangle. So,
well, you know, I did when you're doing. Sometimes when you're an entrepreneur, you get trapped in wearing too many hats.
Yeah,
oh.
You know what I mean. And that's what happens on these events. I'm trying to get everybody on our stage, and then it's like, oh well. Well, come and play behind me. Well, no, I can't because I got to go find what's his name because he's out there in back of the building. And, you know,
yeah, exactly.
So it's just one of those things.
Me both, yeah.
But it's one of those things. But we hopefully will have a great time, and people will come out and support it. And in the future, hopefully, we'll be able to get into more events rather, you know, as opposed to doing.
A tribute.
Tributes and benefits and so forth. And I would like to say one other thing in terms of the benefit thing. And this is something that a lot of people don't know, and it's that I'm also on the community advisory board at Northside Hospital for their cancer outreach program, which is part of the National Cancer Association thing. When the stimulus plan, Northside got on a $300-something million to do outreach. And it's for uninsured people.
Okay, that's great.
Uninsured or underinsured for almost any form of cancer treatment you can imagine, I can get it from them for free.
Wow. Okay, wow.
From Northside Hospital. And I did this, once again, as part of the foundation, because as we all know, usually artists, musicians do not have health insurance.
Not at all.
I don't have health insurance.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of those things that this is unique in that if you, and of course, I pray that absolutely no one calls me for this.
Yes.
You know.
But if it happens.
But if they need it,
we
you know what I mean?
An please, outlet to help.
Yeah, please. And you do not have to be an artist. You don't, this is for anybody.
Wow.
I do it for the artist. You know, I'm on that board for the artist so that it's available for the artist. But Northside has that program for the public.
That's great.
You know.
Well, this was a great show, guys. I honestly would love to have you guys both back in the studio because I think there's 1,000 more stories that we could cover. Thank you, Jessica, for bringing great guests as usual.
Yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed it. I'm glad they both made it.
Well, this is Kevin Finn for Jessica Park and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next time on Meeting Pros.